With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Source Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. For every $25 you bet on college basketball, WynnBET is giving you a chance to win a trip to Las Vegas for March Madness and $1,000 in free WynnBET credits. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGP and your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. Head on over to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app today. And finally, we're brought to you by StableDuel. StableDuel is a horse racing daily fantasy sports app where you can play free and paid games for real cash prizes. You can win as much as $15,000 with just one entry. Head on over to StableDuel.com to get started today. And of course, speaking of apps, don't forget to download the SGPN app. It's your home for all of our free picks and podcasts. Download the SGPN app wherever it is you download apps.
Howdy ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, the mighty, mighty Sports Gambling Podcast Network, coming off another record month for traffic. Thank you, everyone, for listening and reading our stuff. We are up to episode 121. It's going to go out to my dear mother, whose birthday is on March the 3rd. So happy birthday, Mommy, even though I bet you probably don't listen anymore because all this talking of fighting and the blue humor I dip into probably have driven you away, but whoever is listening, actually, if you hear these words, you are listening to this podcast, so thank you. Whoever is listening to these words right now, come out of Jeff Fox's mouth, your host. Some people call me Zombie Girl or Hobo Cop. You take your choice. I will be the host of this here podcast. Like I said, thank you for coming to the podcast. Hopefully you're coming directly to our feed, the MMA Gambling Podcast feed. If not, if you can get on there and subscribe, obviously. That way you'll get our picks in your ears second it drops rather than waiting for it to go out on the very busy SGPN feed. Also, throw us a review. We're still having internal competitions to see who can get the most reviews on their pods. And other podcasts are giving away stuff to bribe people. I think I don't have to do that. I think you people love us, whether we give you tangible things or if we just give you amazing picks, which we always do. So give us a review. I don't even care if it's a bad review. Just give us a review. All right? Be a buddy. We got a pay-per-view card to going down this weekend that we're actually going to give you winning picks on. Let me introduce the associate co-host of mine. This is the man whose recommended plays bring all the boys to the yard. It would be Daniel Gumby. Gumby Vreeland, hello.
Yo, you've said some really flattering things in your introductions over the year plus. Prettiest purple belt at the ball and all that kind of nonsense. But my recommended picks bring all the boys to the yard might be my absolute favorite. I might request that as a permanent introduction.
It's true. Your recommended plays are on fire, Daniel, as you know.
Yeah,
as you know. You're 70-something%, right?
I think I'm 74% on the year, obviously, which is when we started doing the recommended plays. But the return on investment is really what's there for us.
Yes.
And that's what we all care about is money, right?
39% return on investment for Mr. Vreeland for recommended plays, 74% hit rate, and I'm a 68% hit rate for picking every fight on the card. So obviously,
which is pretty ridiculous.
It is. Probably won't last. Hopefully you tailed me already up to this point, because probably where it's going to – wheels are probably gonna fall off, because I usually regress back to about 60%. So I'm going to get about 8% more wrong this week than as per usual. So we had a title fight announced before we get in this fight card. Title fight announced. Talia Santos is the next victim for Valentina Shevchenko. Your thoughts on that? You think it's the right pick?
I think we called that at the beginning of the year.
I think so, yeah.
When we were talking about the flyweight title and who would be the champ at the end of the year, I know we both picked Valentina Shevchenko, but I think when you asked me who was next in that division, I think I picked Talia Santos. I think I thought she was the right option, even if she wasn't the one they were going to go with, because I actually wasn't sure they were going to go with her. I thought they were going to go with, you know, one of the 800 different people that are right there already, you know, the Jessica Andrade's and the Caitlin Chokagians and, like, anybody who could pick up a win over another Caitlin Chokagian, I thought they were going to give the title shot to, but I like that they gave it to her, and we also had a fight booking in that same exact division that seems to line up a possible number one contender as well. Did you see that one?
I did, and it's Manon Fiorot and someone else, right?
Yeah, Manon
Fiorot. Is that the one?
Yeah, Manon Fiorot had her fight canceled with Jessica I for, I believe, this card, right? Like, she was supposed to fight this weekend, which is a huge bummer because I thought that was the fight that was going to catapult Manon Fiorot to a title shot or damn near close to, because I think Jessica I's ranked, like, eighth in the division or something in the UFC. There's a huge chance for Manon Fiorot to move up. I gets hurt. I think she cut her foot open or something like that. Really gross. And instead, Manon Fiorot is going to fight in front of a live audience at UFC Columbus, the first fight night with a live audience again. And she's going to fight Jennifer Maya, who's currently ranked fourth in the UFC. So she has a chance to put herself right in the top five in a huge way. She goes out there and finishes Jennifer Maya. I think she's next, too.
And Dan would be very happy about that, would you not?
I would be there. I honestly believe, with the exception of Erin Blanchfield, who I think is a worse matchup right now for Valentina Shevchenko, but at the same time, way too young to be getting the title shot and clearly needs more, you know, she clearly needs more experience before she gets that. Apart from her, I actually think Manon Fiorot is probably the worst stylistic matchup for Valentina Shevchenko. And if not, it's probably Talia Santos. So, exciting time finally with her getting some challengers that could possibly make her sweat a little.
Yep. And this is the podcast. This podcast is all about women's flyweight. I was usually say what the podcast is not about. We are all about women's flyweight on this podcast. And we have a women's flyweight fight actually coming up this weekend, a grudge match nonetheless. So we should probably dip right into it. But first, of course, I need to tell you about WynnBET, our friends at WynnBET. Have a massive college basketball contest going on right now. The grand prize winner will receive a reserve seating area, which is four seats, at the world-renowned Wynn Las Vegas Race and Sportsbook for the early round action of the college basketball tournament, which is Thursday, March 17th and 18th, as well as two rooms at Wynn Las Vegas. As I close the ad read, no, this is coming right off the head. There's no ad read. As well as two rooms at Wynn Las Vegas for a two-night stay. In addition, they will be awarded with $1,000 in free bets on WynnBET. Any WynnBET patron that places a minimum $24 wager on college basketball during the promotional period will become eligible for the prize, and players can take advantage of the offer immediately. There's no limit to the number of entries that a patron can receive into the grand prize drawing. For example, if a patron wagers $1,000 in college basketball during the promotional period, they will receive 40 entries. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where play through WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. We're also brought to you by StableDuel. There are never enough times to gamble. Let's try again, everyone. There are never enough things to gamble on. And the one sport that runs 365 days a year is horse racing. Best part is, now there's a new way to play the ponies, especially if you are brand new to the sport. Check out StableDuel, a daily fantasy-style app where you can play free and pay games for real cash prizes. Pick your horses, build your stable, and play against others to move up the leaderboard. Win as much as $15,000 with one entry. Don't know anything about horses? Not to worry. The app gives you clear data on which horses to select to build your best strategy. The app is free to download at StableDuel.com. Multiple games are offered each day with free games weekly at tracks all over the United States. Get in the app, create your account, and start building your stable today. Invite your friends to play against you or play against our stables. You can even follow them in the app, and we can compare our stats. This Saturday, something special for y'all. This Saturday, tune in to SGPN StableDuel live stream. Sean Ryan and horse racing expert Malcolm talking ponies. Plus, you have a chance to win $25,000. Live on YouTube, 8:30 Pacific, 11:30 East this Saturday. So make sure to download StableDuel.com, download the app, see how many winners you can pick in your stable, and we'll see you in the winner's circle. Play, race, and win at StableDuel. All right. This card is UFC 272. and it will be going down this Saturday night from T-Mobile Arena, Paradise, Nevada, a.k.a. Las Vegas. What else can I tell you about it? No title. It's a rare UFC pay-per-view that has no title fights on the top, so we'll see how this one does in terms of pay-per-view sales and whatnot. I usually ask Dan his thoughts on picking winners on the card. I'll throw my thoughts out first. I found a lot of lines I do not like on this card, Dan. I didn't find too much value. I was surprised by how high a lot of the lines and people I was picking winners for was. So I wasn't a big fan of making picks on this card.
Yeah, I'll back you on that one. It was terrible. I also had a couple of ones where I was like, man, I was so close to pulling the trigger on the underdog just because I thought it was more of a coin flip fight. Then the odds were, like, close enough that I think I wound up swinging back to the favorites on a couple of them. There's one or two of them that I'm probably going to make a pick on the fly here because, like, it's that close to me. Like, they're that much of a coin flip fight. So we'll see where I land on a couple of them.
Yeah, I was having trouble finding underdogs I found value in, and I may flip-flop, too, as we hash out the details on some of these fights. So let's get things started. Early prelims are on ESPN Plus. I believe it's a 6 p.m. start time, UFC Plus and UFC Fight Pass, 6 Eastern. That would be. We start off with the light heavyweight banger, Michael Oleksychuk versus Dustin Jacoby. The Hanyak is just Dustin Jacoby, who was on the Pop Turtle MMA podcast last week talking to Dan. And Hussar, or is it Husser? Husser, Hussar? What's Oleksychuk's nickname, Dan?
I think it's Hussar, and it means, if I'm not mistaken, it means like a cavalryman in Polish.
Oh, so we have two Polish soldiers going, because the Hanyak's a Polish thing too, isn't it? Like,
I think so.
Rowdy Polish soldier or something?
If I remember, it's basically like the Polish word for like ruffian or hooligan.
Yeah,
And it's what Jacoby's grandma used to call him.
Yes, there you go. Dan's got the insight. All right, let's tell you Oleksychuk first. 16-4 with one no contest, 11 knockouts, one submission on his record. He's been knocked out once, submitted three times, so every one of his losses have come to a finish. He's 4-2 with one no contest in the UFC. He's won two straight fights, though. Last one via TKO. He's fight down at middleweight. He was a regional champ coming on the come up before he got to the UFC. 7 years younger than Jacoby, plus 160. Jacoby, 16-5-1, 10 knockouts, one submission. He's been knocked out once, submitted twice. He's 4-2-1 in the UFC over two stints, but the most recent stint is he's 4-1-1, I believe, over since he's been re-signed with the UFC.
That's correct, yep.
Of course it's correct. That includes two straight wins and undefeated in seven straight fights. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series as well, 0-2 in Bellator, 0-1 in World Series of Fighting. He made his debut in 2010. He also was a regional champ. He also was a champion kickboxer, where he went 10-8. He was a pro boxer, where he went 1-0. He's 3 inches taller than Oleksychuk, 2 inches of reach on him, more active striker, minus 200. We'll let Mr. Vreeland pick first.
All right, I'm going to go with Dustin Jacoby here. While I have liked the resurgence of Michael Oleksychuk, I find what he's done lately as being borderline impressive. Like, I think the fact that he lost those first fights, I thought he was never going to get another fight. All of a sudden, his power is really working out. I'm high on Oleksychuk, and if you gave him another matchup, I might pick him because I've got a good background on him. So the only problem I have with it, though, is that he's fighting a guy who's the worst possible matchup for him. He's a big power puncher who's looking for people to mess up. They gave him a technical kickboxer who is going to be impossible to catch messing up. So, yeah, I love Dustin Jacoby in this fight. I think it's a great matchup for him. I think also he's probably going to tire Oleksychuk out, probably pepper his legs, do a lot of damage there. A lot of reasons to like Dustin Jacoby in this fight.
Yeah, I'm picking Jacoby as well, but this is one of the ones where I thought the line could be a little closer than it is. Minus 200 seems a little high because, you know, Oleksychuk has, as you mentioned, has looked good as of late, but and he's a finisher. But Jacoby is the pick as well. I would have liked to get a better line, but hey, that goes for every fight we're picking here. All right, moving on to lightweights. Devontae Smith, Ludovic Klein. Klein is Mr. Highlight. Smith is King Cage. I'll tell you about Klein first. He's taking this fight on short notice, something to keep in your mind because let's check the stats now. Short notice fighters in 2022 are winning 31% of the time. and overall over the past like 3 years or however long we've been doing this podcast, at least, maybe even longer, 38%. So it's not a winning proposition taking fights at short notice. All right, so he is 11-3 overall. Nope, wrong guy. He's 17-4 overall, 8 knockouts, 8 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted twice. He's 1-2 in the UFC. He won his debut, lost 2 straight, last one via submission. Used to fight at featherweight. This one is up at lightweight. He was missing weight in the past, so maybe that's why this one's at lightweight now. 2 years younger than Smith, plus 165. Smith, King Cage. That's spelled incorrectly. K-A-G-E, for the record. I'm an editor. I know these things. He's 11-3, 10 knockouts, 1 submission. Everything's a finish for him, and it's kill or be killed because he's been knocked out 3 times, so he's never gone to the finish, to the decision. He's 5-2 in the UFC. He's got a loss, win, loss over his last 3 fights. Lost last fight via TKO. He's 1-0 in the Contender Series. He's 2 inches taller than Klein, 4 inches reach on him. He's striking stats in his favor, plus he's 1.5 times more active landing strikes than Klein, plus grappling stats in his favor, minus 170. I will be taking Smith in this one. Everything seems to be lining up in his favor here. Klein's on a slump. Smith has the reach on him and is the more active striker, so he's going to be using that reach. So I definitely like Smith at minus 170 in this one.
Yeah, I agree with you on that too. And I will also add to the effect of, you know, you talking about him being the more active striker. Ludovic Klein is a guy who likes to sit and wait and pick his shots, which is fine because he's a sniper. That's a really great style for him to fight. However, in a fight where he's got such a reach disadvantage, I just see that playing really negatively in his favor. He also works into the clinch a lot in a lot of his fights. And Devontae Smith, not a takedown artist by any means, not a guy who shoots a bunch of takedowns. I think he's got 1 attempt in his career and 1 succeed, and it was because Justin James got in the clinch with him and he hit this weird backward scoop trip, which was very cool. But he's not a wrestler. But I will say this, is he counters wrestling incredibly well, and he turns off of the cage well. I think that's going to really bust up Ludovic Klein, too, because he hits elbows on the escapes. He hits trips, and if he does those types of things, he's really deadly on the top. So you're going to get a guy who's got better reach, and even if Klein gets in on the inside, I really don't see it working out too well for him. So this is one of the ones where I was like, do you pick the underdog just because you're getting dog money and it is a close fight? And then, yeah, I think the reach and the short notice thing just kind of sways this one to Devontae Smith.
Yes, indeed. All right, we're on the same page. Again, let's move on to flyweights. Tim Elliott versus Tajir Ulubekov. No nicknames for any of these guys, unfortunately. Elliott, 17-12-1, 3 knockouts, 6 submissions. He's knocked out once, submitted 5 times. He's 6-10-1 in the UFC over 2 stints, not that great, but he's been okay over his last 3. He's gone 2-1 over his last 3. Over his last 6, that's a different story. 2-4 over his last 6. And he lost his last fight. He used to fight at bantamweight. He was in the Ultimate Fighter where he went 4-0 and earned himself a title shot against Demetrius Johnson, where he won the first round, technically. Did he not on the scorecards?
He did, yep.
Yes. Very good fight. He was the Titan FC champ in between. I think it was in between his UFC stint.
It was in between, yep.
There you go. See, I'm right on everything tonight. Everyone tell me. debut, 2009, debut. Striking and active striking stats in his favor. Grappling stats in his favor, plus 200. Ulubekov, 14-1, 2 knockouts, 6 submissions. Never been finished in a fight. 2-0 in the UFC. He's won 5 straight fights overall. He has multiple regional championships on his mantle. He's got 4 inches reach on Elliott. He's 5 years younger, minus 278. Over to you.
I'm going to go with Tim Elliott. I think
thinking about flipping there, too.
Oh, man, dude, it's a crazy value in this fight. Like, don't get me wrong. First of all, it's insane that Tim Elliott, against just about any flyweight in the whole world, is a 2-1 underdog. That already is insane. Because, like, look, if you told me you were going to pair him with Brandon Moreno tomorrow, I'd give him plus 250, maybe. Because, look, not that Brandon Moreno isn't better. Tim Elliott has been game in every single fight he's ever had. He was game against Demetrius Johnson. He went a full 25 minutes and won some grappling scrambles. Like, the dude grapples so well, you can't ever count him out of fights. He's got great submissions. His striking's right there. And since he's been working with James Krause, he looks better. The only reason he lost to Matthews Nicolau was because he accepted the bottom position, right? In both the second and the third round, he looked for submissions and accepted that bottom position. I don't think you'll see him make that mistake again. So here, against Tagiro Lambakov, who I actually think has got he's good at offensively wrestling, but his defensive wrestling actually leaves a little bit to the imagination. I think Tim Elliott is going to win these scrambles. I think he's going to look better on the feet. Dude, I can't believe we're getting him at plus 200. This, spoiler alert, will be one of my recommended plays because Tim Elliott at that kind of money is insane.
Yeah, Tim Elliott is always in every fight he's in, basically. Very, very tough guy to match up against. And even if you're just looking at stats, all the key indicators are in his favor. Striking, active striking, grappling, all that's in his favor.
He was beating Brandon Royval. Can we talk about that? He was beating Brandon Royval. He's beating Brandon Royval. He was beating Brandon Royval. He was beating Matthews Nicolau. And we're now going to call him an underdog against Tagiro Lambakov. Come on. Lambakov's coming off of a split decision win based on just laying on top of somebody and not going for anything. You ain't going to be able to do that to Tim Elliott.
There you go. Yeah, this is one of the ones I was iffy on. Originally, I just went with the chalk, but then the more I was reading today and then thinking about it, I was going to flip to Elliott, and Dan solidified it for me. So there you go. There's a big plus 200 dog for you there. All right, featherweight, the early prelim main event, so to speak. Brian Kelleher versus Umar Nurmagomedov. There's that name again, Nurmagomedov. Is this... I always say it every time. Is this the real cousin? This is the fake cousin, is it not?
I believe this is his real one, if I'm not mistaken.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, Umar, I believe, is actually related to him, which I think when you look at a picture of him, you're like, oh, yeah.
Okay, fine. Hopefully he's in better shape than Habib is right now.
Yeah, Habib's a big boy.
Habib looked a little puffy.
Habib's a big boy. Puffy. Well, yes. did you see that interview with him in – Is it his brother? No, it's his cousin. His brother is Usman Nurmagomedov, who you might know from Bellator and having the coolest name in MMA right now. Usman Nurmagomedov. Did you hear the interview he had with Megan O'Leary where he said she asked him about whether or not he was bigger, and he was like, yeah, I don't have to train anymore.
Yeah, there you go. Amazing. Amazing what not training will do for you. All right, let's break down this fight. Boom, Kelleher, 24-12, 8 knockouts, 10 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted 6 times. He's 8-5 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight, though. He's been bouncing around between bantamweight and featherweight. This one is up at featherweight this time. What do you think is the best weight class for him before I go on? He seems to be all over the place, this guy.
I think bantam. Most of the time he's moving up to featherweight, it's just because he, doesn't want to cut. And the guy who he's fighting does well, and then the guy he's fighting doesn't either. Because if you look at the dudes he's fighting, a lot of times he's not fighting a featherweight at featherweight. A lot of times he's fighting a bantamweight. Like Cody Stamann is not a featherweight either, but they fought at featherweight. So, there's a couple of times he's done that. I mean, he fought Ode Osborne up at featherweight or at bantamweight, and Ode Osborne's a flyweight. So, it's a lot of people moving divisions and just kind of for convenience' sake.
Yes. All right, there we go. He's a regional champ, or was a regional champ. He was 0-2 in Bellator as well. He's been around since 2011. That's when he made his pro debut. He's a more active striker of the two men. He's at plus 180. All right, Cousin Umar. We can call him Cousin. That could be a nickname for him. He can be Cousin Umar. He's 13-0, 1 knockout, 6 submissions. He's 1-0 in the UFC via submission, but that was way back January 2021. He's been out for over a year. He was 2-0 in PFL before this. He's 2 inches taller than Kelleher, 3 inches of reach on him, 10 years younger. Striking and grappling stats in his favor, minus 750. No value here, but I will be taking Cousin Umar.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for value in this, Brian Kelleher by submission is probably the only thing that brings me any real
Kelleher by submission?
Yeah, because I'm saying, Brian Kelleher's got a great guillotine. If you're looking for value... I think that's the only place you're going to find it. Because, Kelleher by submission is going to be, plus 1,800. That's an insane line. You're going to get 18-1 money on it. If you want to sprinkle on that and just play, a little bit there. But otherwise, I wouldn't bet this fight. Umar Nurmagomedov is going to win. How he's going to win, kind of up in the air. Kelleher's tough as nails. Yes. He sometimes thinks, Umar sometimes thinks he's a striker and throws some strikes. And sometimes he's going to go for a sub. So, I'm not liking any of those props either. So I just think, pick Umar to win because we're degens and we have to put 100 on every fight. I don't like this fight from a betting perspective.
We have to.
We have to.
We have to. We have to. We're compelled. All right, we're four. We're all locked up. 4-0. We're against 61% fights that Dan and I are locked in on. We hit 61% of the time. This year we're at 66%, so we are overperforming on our locks. Also of note, while I'm looking at stats, favorites are winning 70% of the time this year, rather than the usual like 66%. So, do you think it's a matchup thing, or do you think this is just going to revert back down to 66 before we know it within the next few events?
I don't know how much of it is a matchup thing. I will say there is another large chunk of late replacements, which sometimes kind of messes that up, right? Especially if they're not like, you know, when they're Islam Makhachev versus Bobby Green type matchups, like you're going to get more favorites winning. So I think some of it's that, some of it might be, you know, just pure matchup stuff. But bottom line is everything regresses to the mean. That's how math works.
Yep, that is how math works. This is not a math podcast, but sometimes it is.
Math podcast. All right.
But that would I'm sure there is math podcasts out there, right?
I'm sure.
I just don't know if they're popular or not. Speaking of popular, SGPN app. Have you got it yet? You should if you don't already. We're live in the App Store at Google Play. Gives easy access to all our picks, all our podcasts, all our giveaways. The bosses are always giving away money, rather than give it to Dan and myself. They're just giving it to you, to Jens, that enter the contest. So, but that's fine. So make sure you download the app, throw up an app review. Don't actually throw it up. Put down an app review. And all will be well in the world of the Jens and SGPN. All right, moving on to prelims, the main prelims. ESPN, ESPN Plus, 8 p.m. Eastern. We start off with the grudge match. Women's flyweight. This is the grudge match, right? Moroz was the one who called Agapov a junkie, correct?
Yes, correct. This is the only actual grudge match on this fight. And by the way, if you listen to the Top Turtle MMA podcast, you can hear what Maria Agapova has to say about those accusations. Yeah.
was she shooting up heroin while she was talking to you or not?
She was
not. Or
is
she not that kind of junkie?
She says that pretty much everything. I'm not going to give away the lead. Listen to the episode. It's interesting.
I almost got it up for you, everyone.
Her reason. She denies it, obviously, all of the accusations, but also she has a reason why she thinks Marina Meraz is doing it. So, yeah, extra juicy.
Boy, oh boy. All right, anyhow, this is – and Dan also let you know this is the only real grudge match, letting you know that the former best friends who hate each other now in the main event maybe playing that up a bit. So, all right, women's flyweight, Marina Meraz versus Maria Agapova. Why am I butchering your name, Dan? Agapova.
Agapova.
Agapova?
Yeah, it's Agapova.
Who's the junkie now, Dan? putting aside all the feud and the harsh words, this is a good matchup regardless, even if it's not a grudge match, because it's in her favorite weight class, one of her favorite weight classes. All right, Moroz is the Iron Lady. Agapova. Is that it? Agapova.
You added a V at the end.
I did. Agapova is the demon slayer. Did she tell you about slaying any demons? I guess that could also go hand in hand with what Moroz was claiming about her too. But I'm picturing like actual demons.
I actually didn't even realize that was her nickname. You know, I like a good nickname story. I didn't even know that was her nickname while I was interviewing her, and I saw it on her Instagram this morning.
Dan did not do his homework, which is. I'm sad to hear that, Dan. All right, Moroz, like I said, why is she the Iron Lady? I don't know. Do you know why she's the Iron Lady?
I don't.
Before we get too bogged down here.
She's the second Iron Lady, too. Did you know that?
Yes, because Jermaine Duranamy is also
yes!
an Iron Lady.
Yes, very good.
Well, she's not obscure. She was a champion, for crying out loud. A fighting champion, mind you. She wouldn't back down from
champion.
A challenge. She would never back down from a challenge. All right, Moroz, 10-3, one knockout, 5 submissions. Never been finished in a fight. 5-3 in the UFC. She's won 2 straight. She used to fight down a weight class of strawweight. She's an inch taller, plus 165. The Demon Slayer, Agapova. There you go. 10-2, 3 knockouts, 5 submissions. She's been knocked out once. She's 2-1 in the UFC. She's gone win, loss, win over her career. She won via submission in her last fight. She was 2-0 in Invicta before this, and 0-1 on the Contender Series. She's got an inch of reach on Moroz, 6 years younger. Let's check the age thing. Fighters that are 5 years or younger than their opponent this year are winning 61% of the times. So there you go. Something to keep in mind. Striking and active striking stats in her favor. Grappling in her favor. Minus 210. Over to you.
I'm going to Agapova, and not just because...
Agapova.
Yeah, not just because I interviewed her, but really, I think she has so many advantages in this fight. And actually, I only think the line is as close as it is at negative 210 because she's coming off of a nice win over Sabina Mazo, but before that, had that very weird loss to Shanna Dobson, who was levels and levels below her. But at the end of the day, that loss was pretty much just because she gassed herself out. And she proved that, first of all, her gas tank isn't a problem. She took Sabina Mazo into the third round, and not only took her into the third round, but had finishing ability with her hands and her grappling in that round. She popped her with a big shot that probably would have finished her, and instead of going for the kill with the hands, she jumped on her back and took the submission. So, like, Agapova showed me everything I need to see there in the bounce back, but for some reason the line, I thought the line would be way wider than this, and it winds up being a lot closer, so... I think she's going to have an easy time with Meraz, especially being how long Meraz has had out. So, yeah, I'm going to Agapova all day here.
I thought the line was a little too steep for my liking, but don't forget, Agapova was still a junkie that fight, Dan, that you're talking about, where she was she looked bad. So there you go. Now she's not a junkie, right? So
there was a coaching change in there too, as well, which is worth noting.
Yeah,
she did go
to switch camps.
Not only switch camps, but started working with somebody who was helping her with the mental side of the game too, and pacing herself and stuff like that. So that, there is a big change there in her between that Mazo fight and that Shanna Dobson fight.
And as Dan alluded to, I forgot to mention, March 2020 was the last fight for Moreau. So do you know why she's been out 2 years?
I mean, there were injuries in there. I assume being...
But she's iron. She's made of iron, though.
I assume also from, you know, I think she's U.S.-based, but I think the pandemic and probably going back to seeing her family and stuff like that probably threw some wrenches into certain contests, too. So I'm not sure all of the reasons, but, you know, there's obviously many of them.
Yes. Does she get too much iron in her diet? Could that be a problem?
I don't know. Would that stop you from fighting?
Is that why she's called that?
Would that stop you from fighting?
I don't know. Well, I guess if you had an enormous amount, I'm sure something would happen to you. Is that why she's called Iron Lady, Dan?
I'm gonna say no. I don't think it's about iron deficiency or surplus.
All right. Agapova is my pick too, by the way. She's one of those many, many women's flyweight up-and-comers that I'm excited about. So good to see her not fighting another one of the up-and-comers, which the UFC likes to do in women's flyweight and strawweight. All right, light heavyweights. Nikolai Nogumarano. Nogumarano?
Nogumarano.
That's right, isn't it?
Nogumarano.
Nogumarano. I like to say gum. Versus Kennedy Enzichukwu. This is the good last name matchup. Enzichukwu is the African savage. That's not my opinion. That's his nickname, okay? I don't know what the gummy bear. That's what his nickname's going to be. Dan, tell Nikolai his new nickname's Gummy Bear.
I don't think I'll do that, but sure. Okay,
right,
whatever.
It wasn't a very good one. I have to admit, even by my standards,
didn't even get an oof because it wasn't good.
No, not even worthy of an oof. All right, the Gummy Man is 11-1, 7 knockouts, 3 submissions, 2-1 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights. Last fight via TKO. He used to fight at heavyweight. He was regional champ on the come up. He was he's 2 years younger than Enzichukwu. Grappling stats in his favor, plus 115. Enzichukwu, 9-2, 6 knockouts. He's been knocked out himself once. He's 3-2 in the UFC. He lost via knockout his last fight. He was 2-0 in the contender series. He also used to be at heavyweight. He's 5 inches of height over Nogumarano. Nogumarano, 5 inches of reach. Oh, yeah, this back to the stats. Reach. Okay, fighters who have 4 inches of reach or more over their opponent are winning 58% of the time. So pretty decent. Not overwhelmingly good, but good enough. Striking and active striking stats in his favor, minus 145. Enzichukwu is my pick.
Yeah, I'm going with
size,
yeah,
striking, all that jazz. Go ahead.
And this is one of the times, you know, like I know you love to lean on the reach advantages and stuff like this, but this is one of the times I think it is really important to look at that, because if you look at Nogumarano's fight with Alexa Kamer, he did a lot of chasing of Alexa Kamer and, like, reaching and trying to, like, he doesn't cut off angles well in the cage, and then he gets frustrated and he throws kind of, like, long looping shots, And he's fighting a guy with incredible reach who's good at staying away and counters and hits people hard, as we saw Zuchuku do that to Carlos Ulberg when he came back from, you know, absolutely being beaten to a pulp. And that's the other thing about Kennedy, too, is that, like, with the exception of the Daun Jung fight where he did get knocked out, he is a guy who does an excellent job of taking a punch and rebounding from it. I mean, he was basically out against Carlos Ulberg. He was basically out against Danilo Marquez. And he just came back and won both of those fights. So I don't think Nagumaranu's got the finishing ability to get him out of there. And in addition to that, I think he's going to be chasing Kennedy Zuchuku the whole fight. So, yeah, I'd love Kennedy Zuchuku in this one, too.
Not a good idea chasing the guy with the reach and the power that Zuchuku has. So there you go. Still on the same page. Next one. A couple of fighters who I like saying the one name, you like saying the other name. So let's do this in tandem. Witness draw, wait. Marina Rodriguez versus
Yan Xiaonan.
There's teamwork for you. All right. Xiaonan is Fury and Nine. She has two nicknames. She's 13-2 with one no contest. She knocked out five people in her career. She's been knocked out herself once and submitted once. So both of her losses via finish. 6-1 in the UFC. She had a six-fight win streak, which got halted last fight. She lost via TKO. She made her debut in 2009. She's 2 years younger than Rodriguez, more active striker, plus 205. Rodriguez, 15-1-2, six knockouts, one submission, 5-1-2 in the UFC. She's won three straight fights. She used to fight at flyweight. She was 1-0 in the Contender Series. She's an inch taller than Xiaonan, and 2 inches of reach on her, minus 270. Daniel.
So I'm going to take Marina Rodriguez for multiple reasons, but number one is I predicted her to be the champion at the end of the year, so why the hell wouldn't I pick her? But also in this one, too, like the big difference maker for me in this fight is Yan Xiaonan is a fighter that relies on volume. She throws tons of it, right? Her whole idea is she's going to hit you with 120 strikes, and hopefully that's enough to win the fight. But here's the problem. Marina Rodriguez is very hard to hit. And in addition to it being hard to hit, when she returns with a punch, your head snaps back. And for me, that's going to be hard on the judges to score a fight for Yan Xiaonan on her volume if she's getting smoked every single time she comes in. And I don't think she's going to even land that much. Plus, in addition to that, Marina Rodriguez kind of showed that, like, she's not going to be out-grappled by Yan Xiaonan. Like, Mackenzie Dern couldn't out-grapple her. Yan Xiaonan's not going to either. So, yeah, I got a lot of reasons to like Marina Rodriguez. I do want to say, you know, the line's bigger than I was expecting it to be, but I'm still pretty confident that she's the right play here.
Yep, Rodriguez is my pick. I believe I had her as champ, too, at the end of the year. I think that was one of the ones we lined up on. I would have liked a better line as well, but I understand it. She is probably next in line if she can win this fight. That's one of the weight classes. Rose has no one lined up, right?
She's supposed to fight Carla Esparza, but there's like there's like a weird they haven't booked that yet. I think it might be an international fight week kind of fight. So, you know, the timeline might not wind up lining up for Marina Rodriguez. She might have to take one more, which would kind of suck. But the top women in this division are not taking fights with her right now. Like Joanna Jędrzejczyk doesn't want to fight her, nor does Weili Zhang. So, you know, who knows who she's gonna fight next after this, but. You know, I like her in pretty much any fight that's not Weili Zhang and Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and I think she'd probably be tough fights for either of them, too.
Yep. Very true. All right, we'll go to the main event of the prelims. Jalen Turner, Jamie Mullarkey. Turner's the Tarantula. Mullarkey is his middle name, his nickname is Dan. No Mullarkey. Okay? Is that hey, that's not any better either.
Hey!
I think I did that one already anyway.
That at least got an A.
I know. I think I did that last time he fought, too. So I'm using old material now, too. Mullarkey, 14-4, 10 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out himself twice. He's 2-2 in the UFC. However, he's won 2 straight fights, both via a form of knockout, technical knockout. He was a multiple regional champion. Used to fight at featherweight. This one is up at lightweight. He's at plus 128. The Tarantula, Jalen Turner, 11-5, 8 knockouts, 3 submissions. So everything is a finish for him. He's been knocked out himself 3 times. He's 4-2 in the UFC. He's won 3 straight, all via finish. Looked very impressive. He used to fight at welterweight. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series, 2-0 in Bellator, and 1-0 in World Series of Fighting. He's 3 inches of height, 3 inches of reach on Mullarkey. Striking in, twice more active striker than Mullarkey. Grappling, also in his favor, minus 160. Turner, for me, that's a slam dunk. Everything is pointing towards Turner in this fight. All the stats, all the vitals, everything, plus the way he's looked recently. So I like him at minus 160.
Yeah, and I also like how he's kind of fallen back on his grappling a little bit. It's really given me an extra reason to like him in this fight with Jamie Mullarkey, because not that Mullarkey isn't good, and I've loved Malarkey's hands. I think he's doing really impressive things lately, but at the same time, like, Jalen Turner has got the hands and the reach to kind of deal with Jamie Mullarkey. And then in addition to that, when you add in the fact that the dude can wrestle a little bit, and when he's on top of you, man, he's a killer. He's a guy who, like, I mean, you said he's coming off of back-to-back submission wins, and he's a guy we largely know as a striker. So he's really rounding his game out, and I think ultimately that's going to be the undoing for Mullarkey, that he's got to pay attention to all those different facets of the game. So, yeah, I think we're going the same on all eight of the prelims here, and I'm picking Jalen Turner, too.
We are. Jalen Turner submitted Uros Medic, submitted Brock Weaver, TKO'd Joshua Coulibal. So not exactly a murderer's row. Are any of those people still in the UFC?
I believe Coulibal is, and I think Medic is, but if I'm not mistaken, he's on a two-fight losing streak, so he might not be very much longer.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he actually won his first two fights before he got subbed by Jalen Turner. He won on Contender Series, and then he knocked out Alon Cruz.
All right, but anyhow, he's looked good regardless. So, all right, so that wraps up the prelims. All two of us are on the same page. All of us here, all my multiple personalities and Daniel. So that concludes that. Normally, this is where I give you some more of our lovely sponsors, but I don't have any more. Instead, Dan has a very special feature for you here. Take it away, Dan.
Yeah, so before we get on to the main card, I did do a special segment that we wanted to bring to you guys this week. I'm talking with gambling expert, going to have boots on the ground for UFC 272, Nick Dais. So we're going to bring you that interview right now. So cue some kind of interesting transition music that I have. All right, guys, so we got a little treat for you here. We have abandoned Jeff Fox today, and we are going a little bit off script with a guest host for just a little bit. Joining me today is the Lamb, Nick Dais, who is the host of the Veteran Minimums podcast, Upsets and Underdog podcast. He's a jiu-jitsu blue belt, and he's going to be over at UFC 272, so we thought we'd take a break right here in the middle of this podcast to bring you some of the goodness from somebody who is going to be with his feet on the ground. Nick, how you doing today, man?
Dude, what an intro. I appreciate you having me on. I'm a fan of the show. I'm a fan of the brand. I will say Sean could have picked a better football team to root for, but we'll save that for a different conversation. Listen, not everyone's perfect, you know?
Well, I just got to ask then, because, you know, you just said you insulted his football team. I know you're a New York guy, so do I have to – oh, I have to ask, are you a Giants guy?
I'm a Giants guy.
Oh, so you realize you just agreed to chat for a period of time with a Cowboys fan, so this probably didn't get any better. You're probably begging for the Eagles fan by the end of this. So, but anyway, we're here to talk about fights, and obviously UFC 272 is an absolutely – I mean, I guess it's kind of a weird event because it's one of the first times we've seen a headliner – that's on a pay-per-view, that's not a title fight, and doesn't involve Conor McGregor, which is, you know, it usually either has Conor McGregor or a title fight, or sometimes both or two title fights. So, you know, you're heading to this event. What sort of drew you to, of all of the events, to head out to Vegas for this one?
So I want to mention that you're right, that it's not a title fight or it's not a Conor fight, but the last time that I remember a pay-per-view headlined by a non-title Conor kind of guy was Jorge Masvidal, the BMF championship.
Well, that's a title fight. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. So a real title, right? That was in MSG, and I went to that card. And, dude, honestly, I've become such a massive fan of the UFC. I have a very close friend of mine, Jared Flash Gordon, fights at 155, 145 in the UFC from my neighborhood. We grew up together, and through creating content, I've been able to network with a lot of people. So long story short, I always look for a reason to go to Vegas. And I figured, why not? It's a fight weekend. My birthday is actually the 11th. So I'm like, you know what? Let's kill two birds with one stone. We make a birthday weekend. We rage a little bit. We see some fighting. What's better than that? You know, Daniel?
Absolutely. So I got to ask, too. So, you know, you said you got to see the BMF, or you remember the BMF title, and you remember the hype of a Masvidal fight. I feel like there is a little bit of hype behind this weekend's fight, and there is a little bit of, you know, buzz about it, but I don't know how much of it is buzz on Masvidal and buzz on Colby Covington. Do you feel like there's buzz on this rivalry, or do you feel like there's heat on this rivalry that we don't typically see?
So I think some of the air has been taken away from both of these guys. Masvidal is still a big draw, thus why he's headlining this card with Colby. I think for us who are the big fans of UFC and combat sports, we've been wanting this. We've been wanting this for a long time. They're trying to sell us on friend turn foe and all the hostility on the talk shows. Now, I do think the card is a little lackluster top to bottom from a casual standpoint to bring casuals in. One of the reasons why they always have Conor headline a card and there won't need to be a title on the line is because people are going to tune in for Conor. I wish that the Jan and Aljamain fight which was scheduled would have been nice to have this on here. I believe it was Volkanovski too might have been on there with Max. So initially, this is the first Vegas pay-per-view of the year, the new calendar year. And you're saying to yourself, man, three title fights? Like, if you have three title fights, or two title fights, I should say, excuse me, and then you're headlining with Colby and Masvidal, it's more appealing. But I agree with you, man. I think that a little bit of the buzz has been taken away from these guys.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, and I like what you said about the fact that Jorge Masvidal seems to still be a big draw. And you didn't mention Colby, but, like, sort of by implication, you're mentioning there that Colby seems to have been less of a draw now. And it's almost like Masvidal's machismo, or whatever you want to call it, the hype around him, the two losses doesn't seem to take away from that with him, which is kind of an interesting facet, whereas Colby, you know, his whole macho, I'm the best there's ever been. When you lose twice, you look like hell, you know, whereas Masvidal is just, he's a gangster, right? Like, that's what people like about him. He's another Diaz brother, basically, right? Yep. Is that, and people love that about him. So, yeah, I think you're right about that. So, and you're right, top to bottom, not a huge card for people who are casual fans. I mean, unless you know, chip in really badly, want to watch Greg Hardy, you know, Bryce Yuck. Mitchell. Yeah, right, yuck. I'm a Cowboys fan. I don't even like Greg Hardy. So, you know, Bryce Mitchell, Edson Barboza, you know, not tipping anybody's hand and making them dig into their wallet to buy the pay-per-view. Renato Moicano's in the co-main event now. I love watching Renato Moicano, but again, not something typically you're going to get people to buy pay-per-views. So, you know, did you already buy tickets before you knew that this is what the card looked like, or were you, did you pick this one out particularly?
No, we bought tickets beforehand. We just figured, my buddy, Nick also is his name, but we call him Boss. He's never been to a fight in Vegas. So I just figured, look, dude, you know, we could go, we could record some content being a part of Blue Wire as well and hit the studio up there. Let's make a weekend out of it. Why not? So that was mainly the main reason why. And I'm excited for fights anyway, man. Anything in the tri-state area for me, I go to CFFC, Cage Fighting Fury Championships often. That's a huge regional promotion. They're on, I believe, Fight Pass for the UFC. They've had a lot of guys and girls graduate and go from there.
It's graduated.
Pretty much, right? So, yeah, man, I just love fighting. I love fights. I'm fascinated by it, the whole sport. And my favorite thing now, Daniel, too, is it's becoming my favorite thing to bet on as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So let's get to that. But before we do, I'm going to sneak an ad read in here. We are brought to you by PropSwap, where America buys and sells sports bets. March Madness is right around the corner, and PropSwap is your place to cash in on the big dance. Every season, PropSwappers make thousands of dollars by simply buying and selling college basketball teams, like Ike from Idaho or Wes from Iowa, who sold a $250 30-1 Arizona to win the championship ticket for $750 on PropSwap. Now's the time to find those Cinderellas while the odds and cash are out on PropSwap when the tourney starts. And when you're making your bets, remember to go for two. Make two tickets on the same team so that you can sell one for a profit and let it ride. PropSwap has thousands of buyers across the country, so you'll always find the best odds and collect the most for your money.
Hurry and download the free PropSwap app today. PropSwap has fantastic features like filtering listed tickets based on the best value, a free ticket activity feed to stay in the know with all the big sales and red hot tickets for sale, a loyalty rewards program that turns your ticket sales into extra bonus cash, and a first deposit cash match. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit, and PropSwap will match your deposit up to $500. Join the real sports bettors on PropSwap, where America buys and sells bets. And that is a perfect segue into what we're talking about, because we actually, today, while we have the expert on the line here, we wanted to talk a little bit about prop betting on this one, because usually me and Jeff, we break down, as you guys know, all of the fights, or at least hopefully all of you guys know if you're tuning in for the first time. Enjoy the rest of the fights after we let this segment go. We usually break down all the fights. We give you our straight up bets. At the end, we give you our best picks and a crazy parlay to tail along on. But we usually don't dig that deep into props. So I wanted to ask you, Nick, let's start with the main event here, because obviously, you know, that's where people love to put their money. It always makes the main event a little bit extra special. Is there a prop or anything that you're chasing here or you're looking for or you're keeping an eye on the line of for Covington Masvidal?
So I want to just preface by saying how I approach just UFC betting in general. And I think this is such a fascinating fight because it checks off all the boxes as to how I go about prop betting, Daniel. So I personally want to say I want Masvidal to win, but I think it's a domination by Covington. I think Covington, I mean, I get some heat and, you know, so I don't know if I could curse on here, but I get some heat from some of my friends and my fans. I think Colby is the best 170er in the world, right? And I know it's kind of crazy since he's lost fight to Usman. But anyway, the first thing I like looking at is how can Masvidal win this fight? If it goes the distance, I can't see him winning a five-round decision. So automatically, if I'm going to bet Masvidal, he's plus 250. I'm not doing that. I'm betting him inside the distance. I'm betting him plus 400 via TKO knockout. I haven't seen Masvidal attempt a submission in God knows how long. He wants to put on a highlight. He wants that knockout. They've been jawing back and forth. So just off merit and to start, that's how I approach UFC betting. What is the clear path to victory for each fighter?
I love that too. And just kind of to your point, if you're looking back at Jorge Masvidal's, you know, long extensive record, and the dude's been fighting forever. He's fought 50 times in his career, you know, dating back to, I mean, if you can probably count more, if you're talking about him brawling in people's backyards, he's got two submissions. So you're 100% right, right? Like if you're betting Jorge Masvidal, there's no way he's going in there with a guy who throws eight times the volume he does. There's no way he goes in there and out wrestles Colby Covington. So there's no way he's going to win a decision. I'm 100% with you on that one. So out of curiosity, so if you're loving Masvidal by knockout, or you think Masvidal by knockout at plus 400 is the value, are you then hedging a little bit by putting some money on Colby here? Are you, you know, making sure that if he does lose that, are you playing the other side too?
So I think the most popular and trendy pick based on, I like to call him Bill at the bar. The casual fan, when I ask them what the decision is going to be or how this fight's going to go, is everyone's saying five-round domination by Colby, Colby by points. It's minus 110. That's probably what I think is going to happen, but it's not my favorite prop for this fight.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Like when you said, you know, and I just pulled up Best Fight Odds to take a look at what books were offering, negative 110 seems like, I mean, it's crazy to think about a fight that's going to go five rounds and we've got one thing that's giving you negative returns, which, like, you know, it is the most common outcome, right? Or is the most likely thing to happen. But you're right. That's, you know, and spoiler alert for the later in the episode, that's probably what I'm going to pick here. Is I'm going to say Colby Covington wins this fight. I'm probably going to say he's going to win it by decision, but you're right. I'm probably staying away from Colby Covington props, even if I'm trying to hedge my bet on the Jorge Masvidal side. But yeah, I don't like Colby Covington by decision all that much. Although, you know, like you said, it's probably the most likely thing to happen. So if you're liking Jorge Masvidal by knockout, and that's probably the only prop we're kicking around towards the top of the card, what is the other
what are the other main card fights that you're looking at as far as prop betting?
Well, I want to just add a little bit more to this fight, if I may.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just have this image in my head of the cardio machine that is Colby piling it on in the fourth and fifth round and getting a stoppage. He's not going to knock out Jorge, but I could see, you know, Colby goes to the wrestling, something we haven't seen him do in his last couple fights because he hasn't been able to. You know, Usman was never taken down. I know there was a questionable takedown. Yeah. I was at that card too at MSG. But with Colby, I just think that the pace, the cardio, I think it's going to be too much for Jorge. And I think that he could wear him down and then just say a ground and pound sort of stoppage where you hear Herb Dean or Keith Peterson saying, fight back, and then Masvidal doesn't, and there's a stoppage there. So the one that I'm going to do, you know, a little sprinkle. Mm-hmm. I like Colby to win by TKO in the fourth round, 26-1, and then in the fifth round, 29-1.
Jeez, yeah, and that makes sense too, right? Like you're basically, and on for people who are looking for the technical, he's not going to put Jorge Masvidal out. I'm pretty sure of that, right? Like,
right.
But it's that pure volume based bullshit, yes. TKO that Jorge Masvidal fans are going to talk about as being a bullshit stoppage for the rest of time.
Yeah, where he's just going to eat maybe 20 to 25 punches, not contested. And I really think the way, because it plays to what Colby wants to do, right? He wants to wear him down. He wants to push the pace. He wants to pressure him and tire him out. And then I think it's more of a fatigue stoppage, you know? I'm sure you told me before we started recording, you're a purple belt. I'm a blue belt. Listen, man, there's been some times after five-minute rounds of rolling where I do tap out to something that I shouldn't, right? But it's just like that's a fatigue tap out or a fatigue finish.
Well, yeah, especially when you start to get older like I am and you're surrounded by young bucks. I live just outside of a freaking college town, so I've got like a whole bunch of cardio monsters.
Yeah, just like jacked up on testosterone. Yeah. But to end on this fight, look, I think – if the not the sure thing, but the way I would approach it is Masvidal inside the distance is the only way I see him winning. And I think Colby wins a 5-round decision, but there's something in me that just sees it stopping in the fourth or fifth round. You can get crazy odds on those. Like I said, 26-1 odds, 29-1 odds, TKO finish in the fourth or fifth for Colby Covington.
Yeah, and depending, you know, we don't usually talk units there. We play with a pretend $100, but like if you're playing with $100, and even if you just put $5 on that, if that catches, that's your night, right? Like that you're in the plus right there. So, So I love that too. All right, so let's look a little bit down on the let's stay on the pay per view main card. We'll dip into the prelims a little bit later, but let's talk about the pay per view main card, which did just get a shuffle, which unfortunately. There were some props I really liked in that co-main event between RDA and Rafael Fiziev, which now we can't even remotely talk about because now Fiziev has COVID and we are talking about Hanato Moicano. And, of course, because this happened, like 4 hours before we went to recording, we also have pretty much no props on it unless you want to bet that fight goes to decision or fight doesn't go to decision. So the three other fights we got on the main card here, Bryce Mitchell, Edson Barboza, Alex Oliveira versus Kevin Holland, and, of course, Sergey Spivak versus the aforementioned disgusting Greg Hardy. So of those three, is there one that you like particularly when looking at prop bets?
Well, I think similar to Colby versus Masvidal, I think that Bryce Mitchell and Edson Barboza, that's a fight outside of the main event I'm the most excited for. I've been a Bryce Mitchell guy. I've been riding the Bryce Mitchell streak. Barboza now at 145 seems to make weight effortlessly, which was weird because at 155, isn't it crazy, dude? Like, something about these Brazilian fighters that when they're fighting at their original weight class, they start having trouble cutting to it, but then they'll cut an extra class lower, and then all of a sudden everything is...
Jose Aldo is a perfect example of that. Jose Aldo making 135. Dude, we talked for years. I talked for years about how all he's got to do is go up to lightweight and he'd be beating Anthony Pettis for the title up there 100 years ago. And now he's down at 35 in the exact opposite direction. And as an old man, that's crazy shit. And yeah, now we're seeing it with Edson Barboza. Man, yeah, I don't know. It's a wild one. Maybe it's just like hiring a nutritionalist. It's probably a hiring a nutritionalist thing finally. But yeah, no, that's a fight I'm super excited about. So let's talk about props for that and probable outcomes, because it's a weird one in that, you know, we got Bryce Mitchell here, who is seemingly a ground wizard, right? Like that's the thing everybody loves about him, is his jiu-jitsu is out of this world. His wrestling is good, not great, I would say. It leaves a little bit to be desired, especially when it comes to holding opponents down. He gets people down pretty well. He got Andre Feely down, I think, 6 or 7 times. But he didn't, you know, obviously if you take him down 7 times, that means he got up a bunch too. So, and then you got a guy in Edson Barboza who hasn't been submitted since coming down to featherweight. He actually hasn't been submitted unless you go all the way back to his fight with Tony Ferguson, and that was 7 years ago now, and he was badly cut and beat up in that fight. He got subbed by Cowboy Cerrone in 2014, but apart from that, those are the only 2 subs on his record way long ago at lightweight. So how do you put those 2 pieces of information together, where we got one guy who seemingly doesn't get subbed and one guy who loves the subs?
Yeah, I think the way I see this one is, I know the fight is favored not to go the distance. I could see it being a 2-1 kind of score, you know, like a 29-28. I think it goes the distance. If I'm looking at props in particular, I agree with you. Like Mitchell to win by submission, I think a lot of people are going to be on that, because everyone's going to see the twister that he hit in one of his fights. And, you know, he said in an interview, I don't know what the forecast is going to be, but there might be a twister in Vegas. So he's already hyping that up. And I think Barboza is tough, man. And you want to talk about the reason why I'm the most fascinated about this fight is this is a massive step up for Bryce Mitchell. Like Edson has fought, like you said, the who's who's, right? He's fought Gaethje. He's fought Khabib. He's fought Ferguson. And like the list goes on and on. And like Bryce Mitchell, all right, touchy-feely, cool, you know, respect to you. But this is a guy who's been a gatekeeper for the divisions he's been on. And you got to get through him to get a title shot kind of thing. Now, Bryce Mitchell, for me, the way I'm seeing it is I think he does win this fight. But Barboza, I think the only prop I would bet would be Barboza by TKO, because that's how I think he does win the fight. Though I think it goes the distance. If it goes the distance, I think it goes to Mitchell, because his gas tank is better as well. But if I'm going to bet Barboza, I'd rather bet him plus 300 inside the distance via knockout or TKO, as opposed to taking him plus 140.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely there, right? Because the other thing, too, is and we've actually seen judges get, despite the fact that people are shitting on judges all the time, if you're ever on Twitter and looking at it, but like, and rightfully so if you're in the state of Texas. They've been better at not just rewarding the person who's wrestling every single time. But the thing about Bryce Mitchell is he doesn't just wrestle, right? He is constantly in search of both your back and a submission. And whether or not he gets it, sort of immaterial, right? Because he's doing that damage. He's in good positions. He's looking to advance. He's not just sitting in guard. But I think, you know, you sort of make a good point. If it does go to decision, I think it's going to lean in his favor. I think he's going to have a lot of those positions. And it's also worth noting, too, that, like, you know, not that Edson Barboza is bad on the mat, because he has a brown belt over Ricardo Almeida, who's, you know, was a really great submission specialist at his time in the UFC and has been a great jiu-jitsu coach since then. But he does get taken down a lot. You know, like Makwan Amirakani got him down a bunch of times. You know, I remember watching the Khabib and the Kevin Lee fights back to back. And obviously Kevin Lee and Khabib are on a completely different level than Bryce Mitchell is. But like, I remember thinking, like, oh, Khabib drew the game plan for everybody, because then Kevin Lee followed it. Dan Ige tried to follow it to an extent. Makwan Amirakani was on his way to following it before he started getting lit up on the feet a little bit. So, like, I think Bryce Mitchell's got enough in him to follow that, too. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think he probably gets it done there, and it's probably knockout or bust for Barboza. So I'll put you a little bit on the spot then. Do you like the over 2.5 rounds straight up, or are you looking for a decision prop here for Bryce Mitchell?
No, I like that. I like that the over 2.5 rounds. I think it's essentially you get the same odds, minus 120 in either direction. Yeah, man, I think ultimately it goes the distance. because Mitchell isn't a guy who really gets finishes via stoppage unless it's submission, and Barboza hasn't been subbed. So I think it could be one of those things where he constantly is going for the takedowns and tires out Barboza because he doesn't want to get hit. I think Barboza is going to throw one switch kick and he's going to be like, yep, we got to take this to the ground.
Yeah.
So
gets one.
Yeah. I like that. I like that play. And it's also a little safer, right? Because if it goes over 2.5 rounds, you're not really worried about any judges. You just want the fight to go past that mark. So that's how I would approach this fight.
And that also saves you, I will say, too, from the like late Bryce Mitchell exhaustion finish, too. Because, yeah, you know, like we actually did see that with Edson Barboza in, you know, I keep mentioning that Kevin Lee fight. It was 3 fucking years ago, but I'll mention it anyway. Kevin Lee got a late doctor stoppage at 5 minutes in, or the fifth round, with like 2 or 3 minutes into the fifth round, which means that, like, yeah, there's a chance Edson Barboza just gets absolutely cooked at the end of this fight, gives up a dumb submission with 30 seconds left, and that go to the distance prop makes you feel like shit at the end of the night. So, I don't hate that either. So, you know, we're down to about 7 minutes of time here. So let's start digging for some gems in the prelims, because that's where I make my money here. I love playing the prelims, especially on props here, because I'll tell you, I think the books mess up the most when it comes to prelim props, because you know, I said it last week when we were going over sort of some you know, suggested or recommended bets at the end of the night, is we were talking about Ramiz Brahimi came in as a plus 112 or 120 to win by submission. The dude's only ever won by submission, and he was fighting a guy who had lost 4 times by submission. It almost seemed crazy that they were offering those odds, and they were even offering like minus 120 for him to get any finish. So even if you thought for some reason he was going to test his striking or get a TKO, like, man, sometimes they really space on the prelims. So obviously this set of prelims has got quite a few more names than we typically see. You know, Marina Rodriguez and Yan Xiaonan are both, you know, pretty damn close to being title challengers.
I think that goes on the main card.
Do you think that gets bumped up?
Yeah, I mean, they did find a fight for RDA, so maybe no, but I'm blown away that this isn't opening up the card. Like, this fight might be fight of the night. It's a title eliminator, like you said, between those two girls.
And we did a show at the beginning of the year where we talked, we predicted, you know, during that lull where we got almost nothing to bet on, we talked about predictions for who we thought would be the champions at the end of the year. I actually picked Marina Rodriguez for strawweight. I think she's a terrible matchup for Rose Namajunas. She's long, she's lanky, she's absolute pistons with the hands. And really, the only time she's been beat, we saw her out wrestled by Carla Esparza, which sadly, the only thing we've seen Yan Xiaonan lose by is getting badly out wrestled by Carla Esparza. And then Marina Rodriguez went out, beat Mackenzie Dern. So it's not like she didn't figure that out, too. So, you know, all awesome things there. So I agree with you. I'd love to see that on the main card. Unfortunately, the UFC's analytics department, or whatever the fuck they use to make these decisions, and I know it really pisses some people off, but like whatever they use to make this decision, somehow Greg Hardy's name comes out on top. Maybe they use Q scores or some shit like that. But Greg Hardy's name comes out on the main card. Although I'll give a little credit to Sergey Spivak. Sergey Spivak is a young heavyweight, which is almost unheard of in this day and age. The dude's like 27 years old. And he's making main cards, and I think he's ranked 15th in the UFC's official ranking. So, you know, shout out to him for that. But okay, so let's talk a little bit about Marina Rodriguez versus Yan Xiaonan. This is one the books overwhelmingly have going the distance. If you look over 2.5 rounds, we're talking about -260 in most places. You can see as low as -240, as high as 280, but somewhere in that -260 range. Is there something you're playing there? Are you using an inside the distance prop? Do you think this for sure goes decision, and you're just using that decision to juice your odds a little bit?
That's exactly what I'm doing. So one thing that I do just off rip is when I see a fight like this and I see that fight goes to decision is -225. That's telling me that it's a high possibility that it's going to go the distance. So immediately I'm saying to myself, the only thing I would bet on Marina Rodriguez would be for her to win by decision. So she's -255 to win this fight. I'm with you. I'm a big fan of hers. I think she's severely slept on. I don't know what it is. The UFC must not like her, but that's a different conversation. So instead of laying minus 255, I'm going to take the plus 110 to win by decision. Or if I think Jinan is going to win, I'm going to go plus 280 as opposed to taking her at plus 205. And look, if someone gets caught, so be it. But I'm going to play the percentages and get better odds by playing them to win via decision.
Yeah, and I agree on that one, too. I think that's pretty much the only way to play that one. We have seen Marina Rodriguez get, like, I mean, she went out and finished Amanda Ribas on the feet, which was bizarre because then she then fought people who I thought were worse strikers, and like Mackenzie Dern, and couldn't finish her on the feet and had five rounds to do it. So like, yeah, like I think you're right. I think neither of these two are particular finishers. Yan Xianan is more of like a volume puncher. So definitely you're playing Yan Xianan on the odds anyway. There's no reason not to juice those up by changing that into a decision prop, because I think that that for sure makes sense. So yeah, I agree with you entirely on that one too. How about any of these others on the prelims that you're looking at that you particularly like? There's some bigger names, but there are some names here too that people might not know all that much about.
Yeah, so one of my favorite props on the entire slate of UFC is Klein to not only win that fight against Devontae Smith, to win it inside the distance and by knockout. Now, I don't see it by knockout, but the one thing about Devontae Smith is I believe he lost one of his fights as like a minus 1,000 favorite.
Yeah, the Kama Worthy fight. Yeah,
yeah.
Who's like weirdly one of his best friends too.
Yeah, and he took that fight on like 3-4 days notice too. But all of Devontae Smith's recent losses have been by knockout, and he seems to be very chinny. So that's one of the props I'm going to look for and definitely tie into some parlays. You know, Daniel, one thing I like to do, man, is – and I came really close last week. I missed on Islam. I had him by sub, and he won by TKO.
Dude, I saw so many people with that prop out that it was sub, and he took the back like three times. And I had him in a parlay just winning straight out. Just no reason to dip into either of those, and it was just about to cash. And I was like, those poor souls who are hanging to him by sub or him by TKO, because some people I know had him by TKO too, but like hanging, clutching to that idea that it's him by sub or him by TKO, it's like, man, he just decided today was the day I believe in chaos.
Yeah, so I went, you know, I had McKinney in the first round to win. I had Brahimov to win in the first round. I had the Alvarez fight to end inside the distance. I didn't have a strong lean on either side. And I had the cash out option. But one thing about me is I don't hedge. I'm ride or die until the end. And I was one of those people when he was taking the back. I'm like, come on, just slide that hand. But yeah, man, going back to this Klein fight, that's one of the props that I'm definitely waiting to see what the odds are going to be. And I'm going to jump on that because I think Devontae Smith is, you know, I hate saying stuff like this, but I don't see him really as UFC caliber. I don't know much about Klein, but a guy who's chinny like that, I'm usually going to lean to the dog in this fight.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to unveil something that I don't typically unveil, but we're taping this before I started taping with Jeff, and that's a fight I'm still on the fence about picking. Like if you tell me, gun to your head, who you picking, Ludovic Klein or you picking Devontae Smith, both guys have done brilliant things. Both guys have done things that I've loved, and both guys have looked awful at other times. And you're right, though. If you're getting dog odds here on Ludovic Klein, and you're like you said, you don't trust his chin, like that's 100% a line that you should mess with. Now I'm gonna throw one out there too before we depart here, because we are running a little bit low on time. I'm gonna throw one out there for people to mess around with, and that's Maria Agapova and Marina Meraz, which I think this fight we're talking about bad blood at the top of the card.
Yeah,
and I know they're trying to sell us on the bad blood at the top of the card, because first of all, not a believer that it's actually bad blood. I don't believe Colby Covington and Jorge Masvidal hate each other. I'll make no mistake at saying that. I do believe Marina Meraz and Maria Agapova hate each other, both because I've seen it. You can see how much they hate each other. And I talked to Maria Agapova earlier this week. I did an interview with her. on, I believe it was on Sunday, but it will air on my Top Turtle MMA podcast, which you guys can check out on the Top Turtle MMA feed. They don't mind when I plug it. So you can check out that interview with her. She's pissed. She's like, she's messing with my head. She's trying to make me angry. She's trying to make me gas out. She's trying to make me crazy. They don't like each other. And I will say this, the under 1.5 rounds is almost plus 250. The under 2.5 rounds is plus 155. And I will say this, if you look back at Maria Agapova and you look at Maria Agapova's, you know, record so far in the UFC, she's only fought 3 times, granted. But if you look at her record in the UFC so far, we're talking rear naked choke in the first, weird loss by ground and pound in the second round to maybe the worst fighter she's ever fought in her whole life, and then absolutely beast mode rear naked choke in the third round, all of them under 2.5 rounds. You go back to her regional career, first round. She lost on the Contender Series in decision, first round. Like, in against people who have been in the UFC, too, outside of the UFC. Like, she fought Na Liang, Chinese fighter who's come to the UFC since then. So, like, she's fighting high-caliber opponents outside of the UFC, high-caliber opponents inside the UFC, and she's either finishing or being finished. And again, if her emotions get high and you don't trust her to win by submission or win by TKO, you're worried about her getting too crazy, you know, both unders at 1.5 and 2.5, both fun to play, I think. And I will say this, Agapova, if you think she's going to stay calm enough to get the finish herself, you're going to take her odds at negative 200, and just to get her inside the distance is plus 210. I think this one turns into just fury of two women who freaking hate each other.
No, I love it. There is a lot of bad blood between these two women. OnlyFans stuff, yeah. Former teammates and same camp. And
there was claims somebody was on drugs.
Yeah, it's going to be I don't see any handshakes in this one after the fight. That's for sure. But nah, man, you're right. You know, Agapova, this happens sometimes, man. I've seen it happen with odds. I was all over her in her follow up fight after she lost as a big favorite. She was significantly undervalued. I want to say I would have to go back and check, dude. I think she might have even been a dog in that fight after. And I just remember saying to my friend, I'm like, look, man, this girl is legit. I think she is a future title challenger. I think people are overreacting to her being a minus 900 favorite and getting stopped by one of the worst fighters on the roster. And then we jumped all over that. So that's something I like looking at all the time. Anytime, just a rule of thumb, if you see a big favorite and they just so happen to blow up your parlay or your bet, you just take them to win, and they lose, the very next fight, they're going to be undervalued. And then the same goes for when there's a debuting fighter, who Christian Rodriguez, who fought last week. Oh, I cannot wait for him to be in a plus 180 matchup where he has a full camp. Oh, man, I am going to tweet at you and say we are riding this guy.
So. Because he looked great in that fight, too. Definitely worth mentioning how good – and up a weight class right. against a long-ass guy. And JSP is so long for his weight class. So I agree with you entirely on that. And, you know, to go back and cite some of your original points, Agapova in that – it was the Sabina Mazo fight, which actually happened on the same card as that Marina Rodriguez versus Mackenzie Dern fight that I mentioned before. She plus 155. That's insane. And Mazo, I'm pretty sure, was coming off that loss to Sarah McMahon, which didn't look good either. But somehow people hated on Agapova more in that fight, which, I mean, it absolutely baffles me when that kind of stuff happens. And I'll say this, too. I think, if you've been listening to the whole show, fans, you've already heard me say this. I think people are sleeping on Tim Elliott for that same reason in his upcoming fight. Tim Elliott cost a whole bunch of people if they were, you know, he wasn't quite a huge favorite fighting Matthews Nicolau last fight, but he looked like he was out to a huge lead. If you bet the live lines, his live line was looking great after one round, and he blew it. He lost the second and third round, looked really bad, and now we're seeing him as a plus 200 underdog against a guy coming off of only a split decision win. And yeah, he's got a name that sounds like he's from Russia, so you assume he can wrestle, but he gets taken down a bunch. So yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying there. I think we gave the fans some gems here, and unfortunately, I do have to cut this out because very sad moment. I have to bring back Jeff Fox, everybody. You're going to have to listen to him a little bit more. He doesn't usually get to hear me shit on him. He usually shits on me. So this is – and he probably won't listen to this either, so it's fine. Once again, I want to thank my temporary co-host here, Nick Dais. Of course, you can find him on Twitter at NickDais10. He's the host of the Veteran Minimums podcast and the Upset and Underdogs podcast. And, of course, make sure to check out any of his Fight Week stuff. You can catch that through Blue Wire and, of course, all of the places I already mentioned. Nick, thanks so much for the time, man.
Oh, this was awesome, dude. I'm looking forward to connecting again on another card later down the road.
What an amazing interview, Dan. Everything you guys talked about was just was a stunning interview. Can you tell I haven't listened to it yet?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that was out loud. Oops.
I think all the fans know that you – as a matter of fact, there may or may not be a stab in the middle of that where I said, Jeff's not going to listen to this anyway.
Oh, that's rough. Yes, I will. If it's not me talking, I will listen to it. I wanted to make sure Dan didn't throw me under the bus or anything like that. So, Nick was fun to talk to.
Yeah, I mean, you guys who have already listened to it, he's got really great insight on when it comes to how to play props as far as the card goes. Because, like, you know, his insight really is finding value in the props. And I think he showed you guys some that you're really going to like. I agreed with him for a moment on one of the ones in our main event, and now I'm going to backtrack it when we get to our recommended plays.
Oh.
Don't tell anybody, but, like, I thought about it more, and I like the play more and more, even after bad-mouthing it for a second. So we'll get to that a little bit later on, but we should get to going to this main card now that we are done with special feature. By the way, we hope you guys enjoyed it, and if you did, hit us up on Twitter and hit Nick up on Twitter as well. You can find him at NickDais10 on Twitter, and Dais is D-A-I-S. So make sure you hit him up and tell him that you enjoyed his appearance on our show.
I'm going to do that right now, Dan. Okay, I'll tell him I actually listened to it and I enjoyed his appearance on the show. All right. What are we going to talk about now? Let's talk about the pay-per-view portion of UFC 272, which is starting at 10 p.m. Eastern, as per usual. We start off with big boys, heavyweights. Sergey Spivak versus Greg Hardy. Is he a chunky guy?
He is, definitely.
Hardy, I guess, is actually a chunky guy at this point, too, really.
But he's like a chunky guy in the way, like, NFL guys are chunky guys.
Yeah.
He is an NFL guy. But, like, I mean, he's thick, but I don't know if he's chunky. I guess he's almost been Derek Lewis band here. But, like, Sergey Spivak is kind of loose chunky. He's kind of almost like Chris Dawkins.
There you go. All right. Let's break down this fight. We got a polar bear versus a prince of war. Hardy, the prince of war, the aforementioned prince of war, 7-4 with 1 no contest. He's been knocked out he's knocked out 6 people. He himself has been knocked out twice. He's 4-4 with 1 no contest in the UFC. He is, over his last 2, 0-2. Both of them via knockout? I think they were. Or TKO. Let me check the
one was by knockout to Tai Tuivasa, and the other one was a TKO to Marcin Tybura when he basically just let Tybura move into mount because his legs didn't work anymore and he was exhausted and just laid there kind of like a dead fish.
Kind of like a chunky guy. All right, so he's lost 2 straight. He was 2-0 in the Contender Series. Based on the last weigh-ins, he was 26 pounds heavier than Spivak. 2 inches of height, 2 inches of reach on him. Striking and active striking stats in his favor, plus 175. Spivak, the polar bear, is 13-3, 5 knockouts, 6 submissions. He's been knocked out himself twice. He's 4-3 in the UFC. He's won 3 of his last 4, however. His last fight was a TKO loss. He was a regional champ as well, 7 years younger than Hardy. Grappling stats in his favor, minus 225. Your turn to break it down.
Yeah, I'm going to take Spivak.
Or is it my turn? It's your turn.
I'll go first. Yeah, I'm going to take
Spivak. Just go.
I'm going to take Spivak in this fight. I think, you know, Greg Hardy has shown that he doesn't have very good cardio, and you put him in there with a dude who just grinds against the cage and has excellent wrestling. Like, that's nuts, dude. Like, also, do you remember, it's so funny that people are talking about, like, Sergey Spivak is like, he's nothing real special. The dude's 27, and 2 years ago he tapped out Tai Tuivasa. That was 2 years ago he hit an arm triangle on Tai Tuivasa. His only loss in, like, the last year and a half is to Tom Aspinall. So, like, This dude is figuring it out and at the right time, and for some reason now has to fight Greg Hardy, who seems to be doing the exact opposite. I say he grinds him out pretty easily here. Sergey Spivak, easy pick.
Yep, exactly. Spivak is the easy pick for me as well. Yeah, he shouldn't be slept on. He's actually young for heavyweight division. He's actually one of the people that should be considered.
And getting better, too. And getting better.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Hardy is definitely not getting better. This could be the end of the ride, possibly.
No,
Hardy. I'm sure
he's
going to
be here for longer than Sam Alvey.
Oh, God,
yeah. By the way, did you see he's getting another fight?
Yes, he's getting another fight. And he mentioned that every three fights, he's gotten a big raise from the UFC, whether he's won or lost, which he hasn't won. What, how many has he lost now? Six straight or something ridiculous like that?
You gotta count the draw in there to Da-Un Jung.
Right, right. But anyhow, he's been getting raises every three fights regardless. So
good on him.
I'm fine with. He's a good guy, but yeah. Anyhow, this isn't a Sam Alvey podcast, at least not this episode. So let's move on to welterweights. Kevin Holland's going back down to welterweight. He's fighting the Brazilian cowboy Alex Oliveira. Holland's a trailblazer. Oliveira is a cowboy. The cowboy is 22-11-1. That's how many kids he has. His pro record is 22-11-1 as well, with two no contests. He's knocked out 12 people, submitted 5 people. He's been knocked out himself once and submitted 6 times. I'm just kidding about the kids. He really only has what? How many did we say he had?
Like 10 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's trying to have more kids than losses, pro losses, which are 11 at this point. So he's 11-9 with one no contest in the UFC. He's lost 3 straight fights over his last 8. He's 2-6. He used to fight at lightweight. This one's up at welterweight, and he's fighting a guy who usually fights at middleweight. He was missing weight at lightweight, probably because he's ancient now and it's not as easy to cut weight, so he's up to welterweight now. He was regional champ as well. He made his debut in 2011. He's got grappling stats in his favor, plus 230. Trailblazer, Mr. Holland, 21-7, 12 knockouts, 5 submissions. He's been subbed twice. It's only 2 times he's been finished in his career. He's 8-4 in the UFC. He's lost 2 straight. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series, 1-0 in Bellator. He used to fight at middleweight. He was 2-1 as the pro kickboxer. He's 4 inches taller than Oliveira, 5 inches reach on him, 4 years younger. Striking and active strike stats in his favor, minus 300. Holland is the pick in this one. Way, way too big and younger than Oliveira. The grappling obviously is a concern, but I think he can keep Oliveira off him.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. It's a concern, and it's something that I wouldn't be, you know, itching to play a negative 300 number on because that's
no.
There. And plus, we don't know how he looks back at welterweight, but I'll say this. I don't trust Oliveira enough to be really into the idea of taking him either. Again, this is probably another fight that I just stay away from as far as the odds go because they're big on one side, and there's reason to distrust those big odds, but not enough to not pick Kevin Holland here.
Yes, so this will not be one of the recommended plays that bring all the boys to the yard for Dan this week. All right, we're still agreeing on everything. Let me lock Dan in as a Kevin Holland backer. All right. Yeah, we didn't disagree on anything yet. Oh, goodness gracious. So how about this fight? Do you think we're going to disagree on this one? Featherweight, Edson Barboza, Bryce Mitchell. What's your gut feeling here? Are we going to be on the same page or not?
I think we're going to agree.
Okay, let's see. We got Junior Barboza, Thug Nasty Mitchell. Junior, 22-10, 13 knockouts, 1 submission. He's been knocked out 4 times, submitted twice. 16-10 in the UFC. That's crazy. He's fight 27 in the UFC for him. He's won 2 of his last 3. However, yeah, before that, he was on 3 fight losing streaks, so he's gone 2-4 of his last 6. He's lost his last fight via TKO. He's fight at lightweight. He made his debut in 2009. He's got multiple championships on his what?
Mantle.
Yes. He's kickboxing, including kickboxing and grappling championships. You wouldn't think Edson Barboza had a grappling championship, but yes, he does. He's an inch taller than Mr. Nasty. 5 inches of reach on him. Almost 2 times more active striking, plus 130. All right, Thug Nasty is 14-0 with 9 submissions, 5-0 in the UFC. He has not fought since October of 2020. I think he was busy, like, chasing conspiracy theory stuff, right? Is that what he was doing over the past year and a half?
Oof. He's big ball of oof.
Yeah, he's he was like a fun up and coming type of guy, and then he had opened his mouth 1 too many times, right?
Yeah, I think people just let him be comfortable opening his mouth.
Yeah, that might be the issue, but yeah. All right. Anyhow, did he have another testicle injury or something? Is that why he was out?
Yeah, he ripped his nut. I don't think he had a testicle injury. He just
it's true.
Ripped his nut sack open. Yeah.
That's all. That's all he did,
it's
Dan.
Just a,
no big
it's
deal.
Just a minor scrotum tear.
Exactly.
There's your episcode.
Oh, there's
title.
My title.
Minor scrotum tear.
That will bring all the boys to the yard for sure. Just that title will. How many people are just going to X out the podcast when they see that title? But I don't care. I'm going for it anyway. The true degens will listen. All right. What was I telling you about him? Undefeated, 14-0, 9 submissions, 5-0 in the UFC. He's been out for a year and a half almost, October 2020. He's 1-1 in the Ultimate Fighter, 2-0 in World Series of Fighting. He was regional champ as well. He's 8 years younger than Barboza. Striking and grappling stats in the favor, -165. It's you first, is it not, or is it me first?
It's me first, okay. And I'm going to take Bryce Mitchell. I think, look, I really, especially after that school shooting crap, like, I really want to pick against him. But the problem is that, like, Edson Barboza's weakness has always been a guy who wrestles and grapples well, right? Like, Kevin Lee took him down how many times, and just dominated him on top. And he's looked a little bit better since coming down to featherweight. But at the end of the day, man, Bryce Mitchell is so good at grappling. Like, he's so good at taking people down. And, yeah, he's going to eat a dozen leg kicks, and he's going to have to avoid taking a big blow early on. And he's probably going to have to fight him for 15 minutes because Barboza is defending submissions. But ultimately, I think he does that and probably takes a decision here.
What if Bryce Mitchell really isn't a grappler, Dan, and this is just a big government conspiracy that makes him look like he's a good, grappler?
Oh, yeah, that's brilliant.
You ever think of that?
Had not thought of that.
I'm picking Dirtbag Nasty as well in this fight, so we are on the same page as well. All right, co-main event. This was a last-minute co-main event because Rafael Fiziev didn't hear the news that COVID, the pandemic's over, and he caught COVID. Oh, my God. That's so untrendy now, right? It's COVID-19, for crying out loud. This is 2022. Yeah. Hopefully he gets better. Hopefully. Anyhow,
were you looking for a round of applause for that joke?
No. Yes, for sure. Anyhow, did you hear, like, COVID's just a made-up thing anyway, Dan? Did you hear
I'm
all that?
Sure.
It's just a
I'm
money
pretty,
grab?
I'm pretty sure that was it's the money grab one. Who is this? Yes. Give me a second. You said
it was someone. Someone said that recently, I think.
MMA fighter?
Probably.
Is it? All right, there's some bad Gina Carano stuff too.
Yeah, I was going to say bad Gina Carano. Okay, this reminds me of a rant I wanted to make. All right, websites who pretend you're reputable, you don't have to print quote unquote news stories anytime a former fighter says something stupid on Twitter. That's not a news story.
That's true.
If you ignore these people, maybe they'll go away. When they say stupid things,
they won't. Anyhow, they just, won't, though.
I know they won't, but like I wouldn't hear about it at least. But no, all these sites have to say Gina Carano says this. I don't care what Gina Carano says. To tell you the truth, all right?
Yeah, she's the worst. Anyway,
yeah, Chris Cyborg. Chris Cyborg already showed us that. Years ago, yeah, she made her. This is our transition into the co-main event. It is a catchweight, 160-pound fight. Just like our main event last week. That should be the new weight class for the UFC, apparently. 160 is the magic number for them. Rafael Dos Anjos versus Renato Moicano. Let me tell you, Moicano, oh yeah, we call him Rafael Mohawk around these parts because that's what Moicano means in our language here. He is taking this on very short notice. He just fought, he won via submission February the 12th, so this will be a very quick turnaround for him. He's 16-4-1 overall with 9 submissions. He's been knocked out 3 times, submitted once, so everything is a finish when he loses. He's 8-4 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight and 3 of 4. As I said, he just won via submission less than a month ago. He used to fight at featherweight. This one's up at lightweight. He made his debut in 2010. He's 3 inches taller than Dos Anjos, 2 inches reach on him, 5 years younger. Striking and active striking stats in his favor, grappling in his favor, +152. Dos Anjos, 30-13, 5 knockouts, 10 submissions. He's been knocked out 3 times. 19-11 in the UFC. He was the lightweight champion for a spell there. He's gone 2-2 over his last 4 and 2-4 over his last 6. He did win his last fight. However, that was back in November 2020. He used to fight at welterweight. He made his debut in 2004. He's a grappling champion outside of MMA, -188. I'm rolling the dice, Dan. I'm taking the short notice guy. I like the +152. I'm taking Moicano. He's looked very good recently. He's got a lot of size despite fighting, despite them being 2 different weight classes apart at one point. He's got a lot of size on him. He's got the youth on him. He's looked very good as of late. Dos Anjos is, what, 37 now? And hasn't fought in a year and a bit. I think it's worth a roll of the dice here. So I will be taking Moicano at the plus money.
And we are still on the same track. Yes, I am also picking Renato Moicano. I'm like the biggest Renato Moicano believer out there. Every single time somebody tries to write out Renato Moicano, I run you down his list of losses in some of the wins he's got, right? His losses,
yep.
Only one at lightweight, Fiziev. Rafael Fiziev, who was supposed to have this fight in the first place, his only losses, or his most recent losses, if you go down a weight class, we're talking about losing to Brian Ortega, a guy who he was beating for two rounds before he got submitted, Jose Aldo, and Chan Sung Jung. Like, dude, the cream of the crop at featherweight. And he beat the piss out of Calvin Kattar. And get this, he didn't just beat Calvin Kattar. He outstruck Calvin Kattar. Somebody who just outstruck Giga Chikadze got outstruck by Renato Moicano. Like, Moicano can go in there and throw with Dos Anjos. And I also think he can go in there and grapple with him. So, yeah, I'm picking Moicano here, too. And I really like the fact that we're getting plus 152 on him.
Yep, especially since we're taking no other dogs up to this point, Dan.
Oh, we got one other. Oh, I got one other in there. Oh, no, we got one other in there. We both took Tim Elliott.
Oh, yeah, right. I switched on that one. Okay, good. All right. Well, we have actually good dogs, too. Like, that's some decent numbers. Plus 152 and plus 200. So there was a bit too much MMA math in your breakdown there, which makes me a little nervous. But hopefully we get this win regardless. All right, main event, welterweights for – it's the ultimate grudge match, Dan. These guys used to be best friends, and now they hate each other, and this isn't going to end it. What, no matter who wins, this isn't going to end the feud. Do you know? Okay? It's not going to end, they say. It's going to go on. I haven't paid attention to any of this. I just see headlines. Like I said, if websites didn't report this stuff, I wouldn't know it. Welterweights, Colby Chaos Covington versus Jorge Gamebred Masvidal. Both these men have a lot of interesting issues. They have issues, yes. Interesting ideas when it comes to politics and how the world works as well. So, all right, Gamebred, we'll tell you about him first. 35-15, 16 knockouts, 2 submissions. Been knocked out twice. He's been submitted twice. He's 12-8 in the UFC. He's lost 2 straight fights, last one via knockout, but both of those were to the champ, Kamaru Usman. His muscle is so good, he gets to fight for the belt 2 times in a row. He was 5-1 in Strikeforce. Do you remember the one on his record? Do you remember how he got that one on the record? Or was that in – that was in Bellator. He's 2-1 in Bellator. Do you remember the one L he got?
In Bellator is the Tony Amaba inverted triangle. I think
Colby
it's Bellator.
Amada inverted
is
triangle.
Is that Bellator 4?
Yeah, it was an early one, yes.
Yeah, I think it was in Bellator 4.
I'm thinking that probably was the first time I heard of Jorge Masvidal. Maybe he was
probably
the first time
I heard of Bellator, because that was like a big moment for them that they had this like crazy highlight that was everywhere.
I think he fought in Sengoku or Dream. He fought in one of the Japanese places too, did he not? I think I remember him from there too.
I don't remember him in Sengoku, but
all right, I might have made that up. Someone on this card did. He was the AFC champ, whatever that is. He made his debut in 2003. He was 1-0 as a pro boxer, 1-0 as a pro kickboxer. 2 inches of reach on Covington, striking and grappling stats in his favor, surprisingly, because Covington's more of a spamming takedowns than an accurate takedown guy. Plus 260. Chaos Covington, 16-3, 4 knockouts, 4 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted once. He's 11-3 in the UFC. He's 1-2, lost his last fight. He made his debut in 2012. He was the wrestling champion before all this. He's got 4 years younger than Masvidal, minus 350. We'll let Dan break it down first.
I'm taking Colby Covington.
And you love saying that, don't you?
I don't like picking either of them, to be completely honest with you, because they guys who talk themselves.
And Bryce Mitchell, too, on the same card. Dude.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of oofs. But I will say this. You know, like Colby Covington is just going to implement Kamar Usman's game plan from the first fight. Like, he's just going to go in there. He's going to take Jorge Masvidal down, who is notoriously bad at defensive grappling. I don't know where people came up. I saw somebody posted a narrative that, like, oh, is his defensive grappling good enough to stop Colby? Fuck no, it's not. It's never been good enough to stop Colby. Like, in no amount of you showing me them horseplaying in their old apartment next to, like, a box of, Kraft mac and cheese is going to convince me that he actually is going to stop those takedowns. Because recently, like 3 or 4 years ago, he got taken down by Demian Maia all the time. And don't get me wrong, Demian Maia, great grappler, not great at takedowns. So, yeah, I mean, like, Colby Covington, just by grinding him out for as long as he needs to.
Yep, Colby Covington is the pick. Probably won't be – everyone's all excited about this grudge match, but probably he's not even going to be in a very exciting fight. It's going to be a grind. Covington's going to grind. We predicted last issue of this here podcast. We're getting late in the podcast, Dan. Words are coming out that are wrong. We broke down exactly what was going to happen, how the fight was going to go, who was going to win, and how Masvidal was going to react after he loses the fight. So, and he did fight in Sengoku. He was 3-1 in Sengoku.
Wow.
I thought I mentioned that. 2008 and 2009. He was in the lightweight Grand Prix reserve for a bit. So there you go. I know my stuff. So yeah, I'm right. I'm right on everything this week. So hopefully I'm right on all my picks.
Yeah, I hope you're – this is the first week ever. I hope you're right on all your picks too.
Yeah. I think we have one other time where we were the same. And I think you said I think I'm going to go with a whole bunch of oofs instead of minor scrotum tear for the title. I think a whole bunch of oofs may bring more people, more
than
listeners
minor,
in. Than
minor scrotum tear.
Yep, maybe. I'm just thinking. Maybe. All right. That's crazy, Dan. I wonder if our recommended plays are all going to be the same, too. That'll be insane. It'll be like we planned this in advance, which we did not. So, all right. We'll let you go first with the recommended plays because Dan is a specialist here. As we told you, I'm just trying to jinx him by telling you how great he is at making recommended plays. He never misses on these.
I'm gonna spread the wealth a little bit. I actually am gonna go with 6 different recommended plays this week.
Wow.
So I'm really gonna spread
you're
it
never
out.
Never getting out of here.
The first one. Well, let me. Do you have a big list or are you gonna?
I don't make lists.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm asking. No. I'm gonna go to start with Jalen Turner for $30 straight up. I love his advantages here against Jamie Mullarkey. I have a lot of faith in him. So yeah, I'm gonna go with Jalen Turner straight up $30.
All right, -160. Oh, as my computer dims, Dan, you better be quick with your picks because I'm at 19%. All right,
we're on borrowed time.
We're on borrowed time. Covington, no, that number's too big. Nope. See, I do this right. All right, let's go Spivak, just straight up. Let's go. $25, Sergey Spivak winning straight up over Greg Hardy, -225.
All right, and I'm going to go against our guest this week, Nick Dais, who said he really liked Ludovic Klein. I'm going to go with Devontae Smith for $30 straight up. More and more I watched him after I taped that prop segment. I like him. I think he avoids the big blow from Ludovic, and I think he gets it done here. So I'm going to go 30 on Turner, 30 on Smith out the gate.
Wow, he spent $60 and he has 4 more picks to go. I wonder how much all those picks are going to be worth.
Yeah, little.
All right. I like Jalen Turner as well, -160. Let's go straight up on him. Let's go $30 on that one. I like him a bit more than Spivak, just because heavyweight, you know, anything can happen. Happy. See, I told you the words, Dan, the words. Turner, -160, $30 on that.
All right, so here on out, I'm taking little dabs at $10 a piece. So my first one, I'm just going to take Tim Elliott straight up. I don't want to get too much into it because he's still a +200 dog. I'm going to get a good return on my $10 anyway. So, you know, if I'm playing with 100, I like Tim Elliott for $10 of that at plus, what was it, 205 we were saying?
Yep, +200. All right, $30. Actually, how much have I spent? I spent 55. Yeah, let's go $35. Marina Hodhigas over Yao Chanan, straight up. So $35. Marina Hodhigas straight up, -270.
All right, and I'm going to go over to one we talked about on the props portion of it, and I'm going to talk about Bryce Mitchell winning by decision. The reason I like Bryce Mitchell by decision here is because I just don't – I mean, he didn't go out and finish Charles Rosa. I don't really think he can finish Edson Barboza either. So Bryce Mitchell wins by decision. I'm seeing it at, like, +250 right now. I think that's a steal. So I'm going to take $10 on Bryce Mitchell winning by decision.
Okay. Very good. I got $10 left. I had a couple actual props, which I don't usually like playing, but I had a couple props. I was thinking about Umar, but via submission, but Kelleher does get submitted a lot, but I think I like better Let's go. Right, let's go Smith Klein under 1.5 rounds plus 125. Let's sprinkle the last $10 on that one.
I like that. I got $20 left. So my two plays for $10 a piece. I'm gonna take Maria Agapova inside the distance. I'm seeing that at plus 200. So another plus 200 play. And I'm going to take her inside the distance because I think she could sub or knock out Marina Mraz. She's got good hands, but she is finishing with subs most of the time. So, yeah, I'm going to take Agapova plus 200 for $10, and then I'm going to close with a straight-up play on Renato Moicano, $10 for him to win straight-up at whatever number you previously quoted me at. I think he gets it done.
Plus 152. All right, Dan is going all. You're feeling it. You're feeling this hot streak you're on, and you're going all out. So, in conclusion, before my laptop dies, $30. These are Dan's picks. These are the ones you have to listen to because Dan knows the stuff here. $30. Jalen Turner winning outright minus 160. $30. Devontae Smith winning outright minus 170. $10. Tim Elliott winning outright plus 200. $10. Bryce Mitchell, Dan's favorite person in the world, winning via decision plus 250. $10, Maria Agapova. I think you said her name wrong.
I was hoping you didn't catch it.
I caught it. Inside the distance, plus 200. And $10, Renato Mohawk, a.k.a. Moicano, plus 152, winning outright. My picks, $25, Sergei Spivak winning outright, minus 225. $30, Jalen Turner just winning outright, minus 160. Marina Hadhigas winning outright, minus 270 at $35. And $10, Devontae Smith, Ludovic Klein under a round and a half at plus 125. Boom.
You dipped your toes back into the prop world, which I thought you were going to stay away from. But
I was. Well, I did. It was only $10.
All right. So, but you dipped it. You dipped it.
And my laptop is dead.
Well, his laptop is dead, so I'm going to close the show right here because this is where I usually tell you to follow us on Twitter, and he's at Jeff Fox Writer, and I'm at Gumby Vreeland, and of course, download the SGPN app, follow me and all of that kind of stuff. Make sure that you follow the MMA-specific feed, not just the SGPN feed. Leave us a review. We certainly love it. And until next week, I'm Daniel Gumby Vreeland. He is – oh, we can pick whatever one we want, huh? He's the Iron Lady, Jeff Fox, and we will catch you next week.